Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of the program is World Watchers. It's broadcast number 729, and it's November the 25th, 1985. I hope you all have a nice Thanksgiving. It's hard to believe that 1 month from now, Christmas will be here, and the new year again will be rolling around. It all went so fast. Please give books for Christmas gifts, for holiday gifts. It's very important to keep informed on what is happening. There are a lot of good writers. The material is there. There are a lot of serious problems taking place in the world today, and I think they can be systematically and scientifically pinpointed to the origin of their causes. There isn't so much guesswork anymore, and much of it goes back to the very reasons that people are politically assassinated, and as I mentioned last week, to control the masses and the resources, it is necessary to use murder as a tool, as William Buckley acknowledged in his book, and as the State Department wrote in their various doctrines, such as George Kennan's that I cited just last week. In the book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, written by Paris Flammonde, in 1969, he had an introduction to American assassinations in general. Now, this was 1 year before the Project Paperclip came out, the Torbett document, Reinhard Galen's Spy of the Century, 2 years before. And he said about American assassinations, he said, the President of the United States, John Kennedy, was murdered November 22, 1963. The civil rights leader, Martin Luther King, was killed April the 4th, 1968. 2 days later, the United States Attorney General, Ramsey Clark, announced only a single person was involved in the killing of Martin Luther King. There was no evidence of a widespread plot. 1 month later, Attorney General Robert Kennedy was murdered in the Ambassador Hotel. June 5th, 1968. The same Attorney General, Ramsey Clark, said there is no evidence of a conspiracy, only the evidence of an individual act. And Paris Flammonde said, the archetypical assassination of John Kennedy established a pattern of political behavior for the entire decade, and following the appalling day in Dallas, six major factional slaughters, one every 9 months, were accomplished, and many killings of less famous persons. Kennedy's murder actually seems to have deranged some part of the American psyche. The death of Malcolm X denied American blacks their most magnetic leader. The killing of Medgar Evers manifested Burke's admonition, when bad men combine, the good must associate, else they will fall one by one. The age of the assassin has arrived in the United States. No rational American can doubt it any longer. Political murder may have become a more common practice in our land than in any other country in the Western world. The list of the dead grows, and he started to cite some of them. John Kennedy, Malcolm X, George Lincoln Rockwell, who I mentioned last week, the Führer of the American Nazi Party, Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, and Robert Kennedy. Why is Rockwell in this list, along with the civil rights people and the so-called liberal establishment that the State Department wrote in their documents would welcome or allow communism in, and therefore these people have to be killed? Because when Rockwell was murdered in 1967, a further right gentleman from the Pentagon took over by the name of William Pierce, a physicist, a graduate with a PhD, who worked for the Air Force and for United Technology for Pratt Whitney, and then went into the Nazi Party and changed the name to the National Alliance and became more militaristic with direct tentacles into the Defense Department. And then he cites less prominent, but just as dead, Michael Schwerner, Andrew Goodman, and James Chaney. And he cites those three who were killed by the Klan in the South. Now, the current Miss America, her father and grandfather were part of the planning of the murder of Michael Schwerner, Andrew Goodman, and James Chaney. And we have come so far in the American psyche that in 1985, as I mentioned before on a broadcast, you can remove a black Miss America if she had been photographed in the nude, but you promote Miss Mississippi and then Miss America when her father and her grandfather arranged, and one was indicted but acquitted by an all-white jury of the murder of people cited in this chapter in 1969. That's how far we've come in 1985. And in this particular introduction of Paris Flamond, he said the fatal shooting of the long underrated American Nazi, George Lincoln Rockwell, was in all probability an interscene conflict resulting from a combination of quest for greater power. And later it turns over that it not only is greater power, but it is linked to our Defense Department. He said there are mysteries in the half-abandoned Lambeth. For example, why was the National Security American Nazi Party, Dan Burroughs, who also was murdered in the presence of Rockwell, and Lincoln Rockwell from Arlington, Virginia, why were they listed in the address book of Lee Harvey Oswald? No one ever asked why Medgar Evers was struck down. We presume that he had the right of opportunity for people of color in his country, and he was shot down by white racists. And what prerogative do they have because of his particular pigmentation? He died because he was black. Who financed the killers and who activated them? And these are the questions in the introduction to the Kennedy conspiracy that are very important today. And he reiterates the murder of Malcolm Evers, Mr. Schwenner, Goodman, and Cheney, the civil rights people killed in Mississippi. And as I say, today we see the promotion of this woman who was a baby at the time. Should you make her pay for the sins of her parents? No, it is the symbolism. Just as Bitburg was a symbolism in 1985 for the president to lay a wreath with the Waffen-SS, Miss America can come from a father and a grandfather who fueled the car that drove the man who murdered the civil rights leaders. And that is acceptable in 1985 if you want it to be acceptable. He also mentions that Truman Capote was speculating on the possibility that the murders of Kennedy, King, and Kennedy, John, and Robert were elements of one vast intrigue. But we all know how Truman Capote was silenced, and he also was dead in 1985. So in the introduction to the Kennedy conspiracy, which will be with us all for all time, and before the links of the Nazis and NASA came together with the Kennedy assassination, the Star Wars team, and the murder of the people he listed, he was asking questions, Paris Flamond, about the American psyche of accepting these stories of John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, even the murder of George Lincoln Rockwell, and Medgar Evers, Cheney, Swerner, Goodman, Louisa, as well as others. And he asked the question, the real question is not what is an assassin, but who is he? Who are they? The momentous question no longer is simply, was any individual assassination a conspiracy? But there is a greater conspiracy than has been heretofore been conceived. He asked, an incredible plot to eliminate the liberal, the humanistic, and the leaders of America. This is Paris Flamond, and he doesn't get much publicity as an author on the Kennedy assassination. In his book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, goes into Clay Shaw and Permandex and the Montreal connections of the Nazis to the murder of John Kennedy and to the Odessa network that does in fact exist today, which the rabbi in Sao Paulo, Brazil, made Mr. Romeo Tumo negate, as I mentioned several weeks ago. So Paris Flamond understood by his work by 1969 that these elements were there to eliminate the liberal, the humanistic, the leaders. And those documents I cited that came out in 1948 on doing away with the humanistic, the liberal, the concerned, or even the democracies was stated in printing in State Department papers in 1948. And as they escalated the murders of these leaders, people like Paris Flamond caught on and put in an introduction to the book, The Kennedy Conspiracy, that we, in fact, are a country neutralized, such as Central America, South America, Southeast Asia, Europe, Africa, of course, Africa, Middle East, that we also are killing off, as well as we are killing the leaders in all these various countries. And the interesting thing, after my 22 years research, is that no matter what I read or no matter what's published, it all fits together and it comes back to the same teams, the same names and organizations who have been doing this planning all along. I'm grateful to Larry Flint and very proud of the fact that I was able to publish in The Rebel the article on the Nazi connections to the Kennedy assassination, because I think those are the first that have been published in this form in the United States, even though it cost Larry Flint his magazine, The Hustler, and the military people moved into his house, and all hell broke loose for Larry Flint. I'm grateful for the opportunity to have done that. Now, Jim Garrison, the former district attorney in New Orleans, who's a judge in New Orleans now, is coming out with a book on the Odessa connections to the murder of John Kennedy. He was one of the first people who told me about Reinhard Galen's connections to Clay Shaw when I went to New Orleans in 1967. And I was putting together the Solidaris and the White Russians and the Galen operation, figuring it out myself by just taking the testimony and the exhibits of the Warren Commission hearings that I was going through with a fine-tooth comb and spent 9 years studying. Now, I want to go back and continue where I left last week with the Mengele story, because this has to do with that Odessa network and drug connections, assassinations. But this particular story is very interesting, and I don't want to leave it. I want to continue it this week, part two. Out of the Tampa Tribune, this is June the 28th, 1985. And just to get the date straight, because it's always interesting to see this in the perspective, June the 22nd, 1985 is when Romeo Tuma, the police chief down in São Paulo, Brazil, lied about that body, the skull, being Joseph Mengele. Now, the reason they have to lie about that is Tommaso Busetti, who's now the primary witness in the drug trials in New York City and in Italy, I guess the courts in Palermo, Italy. He came out of São Paulo, Brazil, as well as his cohort drug dealer that I mentioned several weeks ago on the radio program. And their headquarters were in São Paulo, Brazil, and their money was deposited in many, many banks, but two in particular, or two institutions, is again E.F. Hutton and Mr. Scott Pierce, the president of E.F. Hutton, is the brother-in-law of George Bush, and the other is Merrill Lynch, the stockbroker, recipients of millions of dollars of the narcotics traffic that checked directly down to São Paulo, Brazil, and the chief of staff of the White House was the chairman of Merrill Lynch before he went on to a cabinet position with Reagan and now is at the White House. So to get the time straight on the Tampa Tribune from Ted Rubenstein, who he sent to David Emery and me, I just want to continue the details on that the two people who deposited the money in those institutions, one was Gaetano Badalamenti, Badalamenti, and he has been in court, and Mr. Tommaso Busetta has been testifying about him and their drug dealing, the headquarters of their operation out of São Paulo, Brazil. And they were the fellows described April 10th in 1984 in the LA Times as depositing the money, as I say, into E.F. Hutton and into Merrill Lynch. I'll get back to that later, but that's the groundwork of the São Paulo network, and that's why the story now of Kaiser is so important. And in the book Forces of Power, Mr. Taub talks about his friend and co-partner. He rented his apartment in New York to Father Morleon. I wrote about him in my article on the Nazis and John Kennedy assassination in The Rebel in November issue, 1983, 2 years ago, about Father Morleon. And it turned out that Morleon's apartment building in Rome is also the place that Mr. Antonov, the defendant in the trial of the assassination attempt against the Pope, rented in that apartment building. So Taub, he's a very important witness because of his close friendship with Jimmy Hoffa, and he tells about who killed Jimmy Hoffa in his book, and then that person was allegedly hired by the Chevron construction company, Raymond Donovan, who Secretary of Labor is on trial for his links to the crime syndicate and various contracts out of his construction company with the mafia. So when they wanted to wipe out William Taub, Ernest Kaiser was the person to do it. And now here's Ernest Kaiser saying he knows where Joseph Mengele is as of May of 1985, and that was his trump card for being left alone, obviously, was to pull out the Mengele. And what I said all along was that Mr. and Mrs. Bossert put a body in a coffin who they said drowned for the purpose of, in case there was extortion or blackmail on Joseph Mengele being alive, they could pull those bones out of the box. And pull them out they did exactly 1 week after the court hearing or the public hearing where the testimony about Mengele's being alive came up at the Tampa trial. Now, I left off last week where Kaiser was shot. He was supposed to help this president of the bank, the Metropolitan Bank, by getting off of charges against him, his financial chicanery down there, by producing Robert Vesco. And his papers and material were taken. The Vesco papers were grabbed from him in Washington, D.C., his satchel. So he took a powder and went off to Germany. And the man who helped him leave, a Mr. Hinshaw, gave him $100,000. He left his a lot of the stuff. His home is in Virginia. Goodness knows what will happen. $300,000 home. His wife, his butler, and his dogs, the family dogs and so forth, and mother-in-law went to meet him in Germany. And so he is protected in Germany. The estate is in Virginia, and I guess it'll be held. Hopefully Kaiser wants to come back today. Now, Kaiser was going to, as I say, produce Joseph Mengele. He went to Germany in February. Manfred Roeder, the attorney that I have been mentioning for many weeks on the broadcast, Manfred Roeder, who links to the Aryan Nations up in Idaho and Richard Butler, and is a connection to the Odessa Network down in South America, he was arrested. He's in a jail in Germany. When he's not in jail, he's in Idaho to visit, and his wife visits Butler from Lockheed, the head of the Aryan Nation. He was in Germany talking about drug charges and terrorism, the connections of drugs, terror, and assassinations as of February this year. And his cohort, a Mr. Fiebelkorn, is also in jail in Germany, who did drug dealing in South America and worked with the P2 and Licio Gelli out of Bolivia and also Paraguay and Brazil. And Fiebelkorn is in jail talking. So these associations of people who had worked with Mengele, who knew him, and other drug dealers have trials going on in Germany who began revealing in February about Joseph Mengele. And when Manfred Roeder got a letter in jail in February of this year, just from Paraguay, saying, "Uncle drowned," that was excuse, according to Mr. Blumenthal, the New York Times, for the scramble to find where Joseph Mengele was, and also officially to close the case. And February is when Dr. Curley gets the pictures of a skull, and in June he's to go to South America. So the basis of what Mr. Kaiser has, he's German, he worked in the Wehrmacht, he fought in Hitler's army. He has some reason for knowing where Mengele is, and he's between Bonn and Munich, and he's dangling this as Mr. Hinshaw's protection. Don't worry about being prosecuted for helping me get out of the country with all this money. We'll bring in the Mengele story. I'll bring in Mengele. And Hinshaw claims that Kaiser tricked him out of $100,000 and went over to Europe and fled the country. And he helped him. They did help him go to Baltimore and then Detroit to the Canadian border and then to London and then to Germany. And he used the passport of a Washington lobbyist, but Ernest Kaiser has used many, many passports before. And he took a van and his whole party went to Bonn, Germany. And Stephen Drake, Daniel Stephen Drake, is his valet who went with him. And Joseph and Mr. Kaiser, Ernest Kaiser, said, in quotes, "I have several meetings with the Israelis in Bonn, Germany, in the suburb of Bob Doesburg." And there was a possibility of his going to Paraguay. He was going down and look for Mengele. He has the leads. And this is of February or so of 1985, he's on his way, Ernest Kaiser. He's been shot because of his Vesco papers and connections in the United States. He successfully brought Edwin Wilson to jail, and he says that he has information, and the Israeli intelligence have still said that Joseph Mengele is not dead. They do not say he is dead. Now, the background on Kaiser, because of his complicated web, is very interesting to study, and this article gives more details than they ever had about his going to Germany, and that if the expedition captures Mengele, then he's sure that that Mr. Hinshaw and the others will be get pardoned for any crimes and that the scheme will work. But according to this article in the Tampa paper, 1 week later, they said the body was found in Brazil, and Mr. Hinshaw, not being very sophisticated, just simply assisting him and leave the country, had to accept the official story that the corpse that was drowned in 1979 was Joseph Mengele, although the article in the Tampa paper says it is now almost universally accepted or believed it was Mengele. But as I cited last week, there was a meeting in Indiana and also in Germany saying it wasn't him. Now, Kaiser used a lot of aliases. They're described in this article: August von Kaiser, Ernest Resick, Ernesto Roberto Kaiser, Al Morgan, Udo Friest, Jacob Shermansky. And he has said he worked for the CIA, for the OSS first. He worked in German Wehrmacht for Adolf Hitler, then the OSS. Otto von Bolschwing worked for the Waffen-SS and then the OSS. He says he worked for U.S. Army military intelligence. I wonder if he knew Henry Kissinger, the young punk over there with CIC, because they have same friends and people in common or activities later on. Kissinger was in charge of Task Force 157 in Washington, D.C., the intelligence operation that hired Edwin Wilson. And Ernest Kaiser brought home Wilson to hush him up so that he couldn't blackmail or extort. And Kissinger, again, and Fritz Kramer are directly linked to being in charge of this secret operation 157. And Wilson has been silenced. You haven't heard anything about Edwin Wilson in the past year. He says, Kaiser, they worked for the Drug Administration and the National Security Agency. First accounts were that he was born in New York in 1918 of German parents and went to South America. His education was in Chile and Brazil. And he claims he was taken to Germany in 1942 in the middle of the war. He didn't want to evidently be American if he was born in America, which it turns out he wasn't. But he was in the Wehrmacht in the German with the German army from 1942 on, fighting the Americans and the Russians. He says he survived a couple of times being captured. And in his biography, he describes clandestine activities in the Soviet-occupied Central Europe and his war with communism. And he describes himself as, in quotes, the operative. He has black entries that he made inside communist territory and worked as the agency calls a lone wolf. In other words, if he's caught, they don't protect him. If he tried to murder William Taub and he was indicted, he can get off. The intelligence community can pull the cord trick, just as they told the Roshnish, get out of America fast. He hires Miles Ambrose, and within 48 hours, he's gone. As wealthy as ever and as criminal as ever. But in this case, you're on your own. You can't use the agencies. Kaiser worked in the Middle East, and this is very important because of the Middle East connection to San Paolo and Mengele and the police chief down there and Henry R. San and the drug connections from Syria and the people in South America that played a connecting role. His cover for a lot of activity was as a freelance journalist. I mentioned last week that Carl Stewart, whose real name was Schoenberger, who also was a German, you read about a newspaper set up by Carl Stewart, and you don't know his name is a Schoenberger from Germany, who had the independent press system in Cuba. And again, this German's cover, Mr. Kaiser's cover under different names, was a freelance journalist, and he worked out of Cairo and Beirut and Tangier and activities in the Middle East, very familiar with it. And he's on intimate terms with King Hussein of Jordan. Also, Jordan has very close links to our intelligence community. He was the recipient, he and his wife, of Lockheed spy money. But as soon as that story came out, one of his many wives was killed in an airplane crash when the links of him to the Lockheed spy money came out. Now, as far as South America, Kaiser, according to this article in the Tampa Tribune, June 28th, says that he's very familiar with the drug trade in South America, in Bogota, Colombia, in Rio de Janeiro, in Brazil, in Mexico City, in the Bahamas, and out of Fort Lauderdale, Texas. And then they ask the question, where did he really come from? The birth certificate isn't available in New York. There was supposed to be a fire at the hospital. There's no record of his birth certificate. And the author of this article said he served the German army, as I say, in World War II, and he showed up in 1948, serving time in an Austrian prison, and then Interpol began to classify some of his various arrests, but they weren't so serious that they didn't trust Edwin Wilson of Task Force 157, who worked with Robert Keith Gray, now the head of the Public Relations Office, the powerhouse in Washington, and the U.S. intelligence used him to bring in Wilson. So whatever their denials, they had the number one big fish of terrorism and CIA or Nugenhand money and assassination death squads and drugs, and they gave him to Kaiser, who brought him home and put him in a clink where you don't hear from him. So whatever he is or whoever he is, he's very important to the intelligence community because Edwin Wilson was one of their top people. Now, they had trouble with his fingerprints. This article says when he was first arrested, he fled the country on this indictment. Something funny happened. The article says apparently his fingerprints aren't like ordinary men, that they can't be categorized by standard methods, that the fingerprints after the court hearing in Tampa were taken five times and then a sixth time, and they had technical difficulties taking his prints. Now, with all these aliases and fighting in Hitler's Wehrmacht and being a scoundrel who's in various countries under various covers, I think of Colonia Dignidad, that territory between Chile and Argentina, where the top Nazis went for face surgery and finger surgery, where they did peel off fingers. And Michael Townley, one of the CIA people working in Chile with the military police, with Mr. Pinochet, who was involved with the murder of Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffitt in Washington, D.C., while George Bush was CIA director, he was trained and worked down in Colonia Dignidad, and the stories of that place tell about their tampering with fingerprints. Now to the story of the bank, the Metropolitan Bank, which collects and makes a cycle to a lot of other work that I've done. It pulls in a lot of people that I've talked about on the air. And then into this scene or milieu comes Ernest Kaiser, who introduces himself to that situation with all of his past relationships and knowledge of Germany, Middle East, South America, drugs, assassinations, and so forth. In 1982, there was a bank failure at the Metropolitan Bank in Tampa, Florida. In July of 1984, the head of the bank, the former president of the bank, Donald Regar, R-E-G-A-R, was arrested based upon the collapse of what was Florida's biggest bank failure. And in comes Ernest Kaiser, who volunteers to help him. He says, "I have influence in the Justice Department," and he was very close to Mr. Bartello. That's the fellow that prosecuted Edwin Wilson, who spoke up for Kaiser and said, yes, you know, he's a great guy. So, and Donald Regar, the president of the Metropolitan Bank, wanted the case, evidently wanted it fixed, because he paid money, he paid this con man, Kaiser, thought he could do it to help him with the charges that were bothering him down there in Tampa, Florida. And the catch was, according to Kaiser, and I stated before, I'll bring in Robert Vesco, like I did Edwin Wilson, and the Justice Department that wants Robert Vesco will be so grateful that they will blow your case. This was his logic. Vesco's wanted for a fraud of $224,000. He was living in Costa Rica. He's living in Cuba at the time. Now, Regar turned in Kaiser. It wasn't going to work. As I say, Kaiser was shot and fled the country, and he pleaded guilty to the bank case, and he told the Justice Department what was happening. In return, he received probation. Nothing happened to him anyway. He didn't have to put up the money. But he went to the federal officials, and he told them that he wanted to bring in Kaiser, who took his money for the fixing, and he realized that Kaiser couldn't help him. The promises that everything would be taken care of. Now, Kaiser was arrested, pailed in for allegedly making this deal, and Mr. Regar, the head of the Metropolitan Bank, temporarily was put in jail, released later. Then Kaiser got bail, and he simply walked out, just as the Bhagwan Rajneesh walked out. In Oregon, the past 2 weeks, Miles Ambrose of the Drug Enforcement Agency and his scandalous record with Interpol and with the team of G. Gordon Liddy and the White House plumbers, Kaiser has that same inroad into the highest levels of intelligence. and drug enforcement and so forth. So he walked out. He didn't have to put up any cash, and he left. Left the home and went away to Europe, as I say. And Larry Barcella, the head of the, he's a U.S. magistrate, said, had told the powers that be that Kaiser has a unique background and that he helped with the Wilson Project and that he got the approval of the government and the Justice Department for what he was doing. So they assumed with that he would appear in court, that he would want to stay in the United States, and he put up a $1 million personal security bond with his home as security, and then he left the country. He didn't have much cash, and the fellow who helped Kaiser, as I said, has been prosecuted for helping him leave the country. We'll take a one-minute break from World Watchers, and then I'll go back to Mr. Kaiser and the bank in Tampa, Florida, and that convoluted story, which, interestingly enough, should have any role with Ernest Kaiser and the airplane crash in the Potomac River near Florida, the crash that I described on a lot of broadcasts earlier, 1982.